Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during this workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Sam, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Living with Multiple Myeloma, and today's part one of that series, and it's bone health for people living with multiple myeloma. Very important topic for all of you. And I want to actually identify that this is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And it really is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. And, of course, your interest in the program as well. We have over 845 participants on the call today, and you come from all over the United States. We're all different parts of the United States, and we have international participants from Australia, Canada, India, Ireland, Malaysia, the United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So you really come from all over the world, and it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. This activity is supported by an education donation provided by Amgen. I really want to thank them for their support of this program today. I would like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there's information about our speakers, topics they'll be addressing, all of our collaborating organizations as a resource for you, and there is an evaluation form there, and I would ask you all to take a moment and complete that evaluation form. You are the best to tell us what programs we should be offering, the topics that are important to you, so we take your recommendations very seriously. Indeed, this whole series is based on your requests from previous evaluations. So we try very hard to listen to what you tell us to do and to implement that. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today. And I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Jeffrey Wolf. And Dr. Wolf is Professor of Medicine, Director, Myeloma Program, Division of Hematology Oncology, Blood and Marrow Transplantation, University of California, San Francisco. And Dr. Wolf is going to address an overview of multiple myeloma and its effect on the bones, questions to ask your doctor about bone health, quality of life issues and concerns, and a word about clinical trials. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Wolf.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you all for joining us. Multiple myeloma is a cancer of plasma cells. These are the cells in the body that make antibodies, the proteins that protect us from infections. If one of those cells becomes malignant, it can create trillions just like itself, and these cells can do great damage. They also produce substances. One substance they produce is like the antibodies they normally produce, and we can measure that protein in the blood. Many of you who have myeloma know that your doctors are constantly measuring your cancer by the proteins that are produced in the blood or excreted in the kidney, by the kidneys. The cancer myeloma can cause many problems. Most obviously, if the cancer grows in the bone marrow, it crowds out normal bone marrow cells and patients can become anemic. Their blood counts can go down. The proteins can lodge in the kidneys and cause kidney problems. Many of you, unfortunately, have presented with that, and sometimes it's serious enough to require dialysis. This is an emergency, and often we can reverse this if we act quickly enough. But most importantly, what myeloma can do is it can secrete substances that erode the bones and cause holes in the bone, which we call lytic lesions, L-Y-T-I-C, or can simply take calcium out of the bone and make patients' bones more osteopenic, meaning low calcium, or osteoporotic, meaning so little calcium that these bones can easily fracture. They can also fracture around the sites of these lytic lesions. So 90% of patients with myeloma at some point in their disease will actually have bone involvement. About two-thirds of those have these punched-out lesions where there's actually like a mouse has come in there and eaten a hole in the bone. Maybe 20% present just with low calcium in their bones. But any bone in the body can be affected. It's not so common below the elbows or below the knees, although we've seen lesions in those bones as well. Plain X-rays, the kind that were invented 100 years ago by Madame Curie and William Rankine, can pick up severe cases of lytic lesions, but it takes about 30 to 50% loss of bone structure, loss of calcium, before you can see it on plain films. So we, in the field of myeloma, are getting used to using imaging techniques such as magnetic resonance, MRI, PET and CT scanning that help us identify these lesions before they're severe enough to cause these holes and cause these complications. Many patients, perhaps two-thirds of patients, first present with their myeloma because of pain, either a compression fracture in the spine, causing them to have great pain. They actually lose height because of this. Fractured ribs are not uncommon, or even a fractured hip. As the cancer cells remove calcium from bones, that calcium can wind up in the blood, and so patients can wind up with what's called hypercalcemia, too much calcium in the bone. We have, over the last 10 years, made tremendous progress with myeloma, the treatment of myeloma. We have a bunch of new drugs, bortezomib, which you may know of as Velcade, lenalidomide, which you know of as Revlimid, and most recently, carfilzomib called Kyprolis, or pomalidomide, which is called Pomalyst. And the combinations of these drugs with some old-fashioned approaches like autologous stem cell transplantation have improved not just the survival of our patients — many, many patients with myeloma are living longer — but improved their quality of life. Treatment with these drugs can definitely reduce the pain, reduce the chances of fracture, and can improve the blood counts so that patients often return to normal quality of life. Questions you should ask your doctor would include, what can you do to improve your bone health? Are you getting treated aggressively enough to achieve a complete remission, which is something that we really strive for? And ask your doctor about supplements as well, and I think Dr. Rajay is going to approach this as well. We are currently conducting many, many clinical trials looking at new drugs or combinations of old drugs, and so another question you can ask your doctor is, what clinical trial is available for you to help test out new drugs? Firstly, it's going to help other people down the line, but it might help you if you actually get a drug that hasn't been approved yet, but is quite effective. Dr. Rajay is going to follow me and talk about specific treatment for your bone disease, and I'll be available for any questions later. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Wolf, for just a really excellent presentation and overview of multiple myeloma. Thank you. And our next presenter is Dr. Nupur Rajay. Dr. Rajay is Associate Professor, Department of Medicine, Harvard Medical School, Director, Center for Multiple Myeloma, Division of Hematology and Oncology, Massachusetts General Hospital. And Dr. Rajay is going to address reducing complications of bone disease, managing bone pain and discomfort, the role of physical activity, nutritional concerns and tips, and clinical trials. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Rajay.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, Dr. Wolf, for that very nice overview. It is a pleasure to be here this afternoon. As you've just heard from Dr. Wolf, the use of a lot of the novel treatments which Dr. Wolf just talked about has resulted in the transformation of myeloma into a very chronic disease. And that in itself is a very exciting thing for us. It's an exciting time for patients, exciting time for research. So again, as Dr. Wolf has pointed out, I cannot underscore the importance of clinical trials. I would encourage all of you to seek out clinical trials at sites close to you, communicate with your healthcare providers, find out if there would be a particular trial which would be appropriate for you, because we are really where we are with myeloma care because of all of these new drugs. Shifting gears a little bit now, I will focus mainly on symptom and pain management, and then finally talk a little bit about quality of life issues pertaining to your myeloma. And again, the fact that we are discussing all of these issues is largely, again, a reflection of the chronicity of this disease. As a consequence, symptom control has, in fact, become center stage to the management of myeloma. For you, I think it is critically important that you engage with your care team, you communicate your symptoms so that your care team will actually be able to help you manage these symptoms most effectively. Your care team should be a team effort, and you need to be at the center of it. You have to be the focal point, and unless you let your healthcare providers know exactly what's going on with you, it's going to be hard for them to address some of these issues. When thinking about symptoms related to myeloma, I will first talk about symptoms related to the disease itself. As Dr. Wolf has already discussed, symptoms from disease may be related to bone disease, which is one of the most common problems of how myeloma patients present. And, you know, more than 90% of multiple myeloma patients present with symptoms related to bone. Some of the other symptoms which are noted are symptoms because of anemia, which may be related to fatigue. Other features related to bone-related issues may be because of increased calcium levels. And some of the other symptoms may be related to kidney dysfunction or infections because of the immunocompromised nature of the disease itself. All of these symptoms will, in fact, be corrected if the treatment for myeloma is pursued. So once you correct your myeloma, most of these symptoms get better. There are, however, certain supportive care measures which are recommended and which you need to piggyback to whatever you're doing for your myeloma. And these supportive care measures are going to help you tolerate your treatment much better and will help alleviate some of these symptoms as well. As far as the bone disease is concerned, strategies including the use of bisphosphonates like pomidronate, also known as Iridia, which you commonly refer to as Iridia, or zoledronic acid, also called Zometa, is the recommended treatment for myeloma-related bone disease. These are bone-strengthening agents. These are given intravenously, and most of you go into the clinic once a month. A lot of you call this bone glue because it helps strengthen your bones. And what these drugs have been shown to do in large randomized clinical trials is to decrease the incidence of complications of bone disease, which, again, Dr. Wolf has already mentioned, these being pain, fractures, sometimes you need radiation to certain bones, and sometimes you also need surgery to some of these bones. Fairly recently, there's been a very large study which was done in the UK, and what this study showed in more than 2,000 patients with multiple myeloma was that Zometa or zoledronic acid was in fact able to correct not only bone disease but help myeloma as well, and patients who were on drugs like zoledronic acid in fact lived longer. So certainly a good drug, and while you're getting your treatment for your underlying myeloma, you should be on a bone strengthener like Iridia or pomidronate or zoledronic acid or Zometa. Either one is a perfectly reasonable option to reach out to. I have to remember to tell you that, you know, Dr. Wolf talked about high calcium levels at the beginning, at the time you present, but once you're on some of these bone strengthening agents, it's important to supplement yourself with calcium, because some of these drugs actually will cause your calcium to go down. And for these drugs like Zometa and Iridia to really work well, you have to be calcium replete. So generally, we would recommend that you take about 500 milligrams of calcium every day while you're on drugs like Zometa or Iridia. And with that, we generally would like you to supplement with vitamin D. And the recommended amount of vitamin D right now is about 1,000 units. Occasionally, your health care providers, your care team will tell you to take higher levels of these, specifically if your calcium levels or your vitamin D levels are low in your bloodstream, and that's generally measured when you come to your clinic visits. There are certain other local measures which can be very useful in the context of myeloma bone disease. As you all know, a lot of patients with multiple myeloma will have their spine involved with myeloma bone disease, and this results in vertebral compression fractures. And over the course of your life with myeloma, a lot of you tend to lose height, suggesting that you have compression fractures in those vertebral bodies. They can indeed be quite painful, these compression fractures. fractures, and certain procedures such as vertebral augmentation procedures, also known as either a vertebroplasty or a kyphoplasty, are very helpful. These are outpatient procedures. The difference between a vertebroplasty and a kyphoplasty is simply that vertebroplasty, you go in with a needle under fluoroscopic guidance and inject cement. Kyphoplasty is same cement injected, but there's a balloon in place and you inject the cement into the balloon. Again, outpatient procedures, you come into the clinic, get the procedure done, go home pretty much the same day, and it is very useful for pain control in situations with compression fractures affecting the spine. Again, I will tell you that treating the underlying myeloma in itself is going to help ameliorate some of these bone symptoms as well, and also prevent, hopefully, future bone problems as things go along. We've done, we have some other exciting things which are of great interest in myeloma bone disease, specifically drugs which actually can activate osteoblasts. Now, osteoblasts are bone-forming cells, and these there are drugs within the myeloma realm which tend to do that. These osteoblasts result in bone healing. Drugs like bortezomib or Velcade, a lot of you have already been exposed to these. These drugs are actually very good at forming new bone as well. So in addition to the bisphosphonates, anti-myeloma drugs can also help with your bone disease. Therefore, drugs like Velcade in combination with pomitronate or Xumeda may have a favorable impact on your bone disease. Other drugs such as lenalidomide or Revlimid, which was again mentioned by Dr. Wolf, can also help with preventing further bone loss. We have certain exciting drugs in the lab which we are working with, and these are drugs, again, coming under the category of bone anabolic agents. They are undergoing very early preclinical testing in the laboratories, as well as are being studied as we speak in clinical trials. We refer to them as anabolic agents. We have several of them, one targeted against DKK1. There's an antibody called DKN01. There's another one called BHQ, both in clinical trials. There's another antibody called ACE011. All of these will be available, and hopefully you should check in to a clinic near you to see if these are available for the treatment of bone disease. Another example of a novel agent for bone disease is a drug called denosumab. It's also called XGEVA, and in fact, this drug has been approved for the treatment of bone disease with some of the other cancers like breast cancer and prostate cancer, and it's also used quite a lot in the setting of osteoporosis. In the myeloma world, it has been compared with zoledronic acid, and it's been shown that bone disease is treated just as well with denosumab. It's not quite approved for the treatment of myeloma. This is a drug which is a monoclonal antibody. It targets a certain protein called RANK ligand, and we all know that RANK ligand is a protein which helps stimulate the bone disease. And what this antibody does is negates the effect of this protein called RANK ligand. We have an ongoing international multicenter effort with this trial now. This study is open pretty much all over the country and all over the world, in fact, where we are comparing denosumab with zoledronic acid in multiple myeloma patients. And depending on what the study looks like, our hope is that we're going to have denosumab, which would be one additional drug approved for the treatment of myeloma-related bone disease. Again, given the availability of novel agents, myeloma, as I've mentioned earlier as well, has translated into a chronic disease. And with that, we are seeing patients stay on these drugs for a long time, and we are seeing certain long-term toxicities of these drugs, such as osteonecrosis of the jaw. Some other symptoms which I will mention quickly are fatigue. Fatigue is very common with myeloma. Some of it is from the anemia, which a lot of patients will present with. Some of it may be related to just being on drugs, because I think the theme now for myeloma has been we are keeping patients on medications for protracted periods of time. We're using maintenance strategies, and with that, one of the side effects of some of the medications we use could be fatigue. We do tend to use use drugs like erythropoietin or EPO if the fatigue is from anemia. I will tell you that this should be used cautiously. It should only be used if your hemoglobin levels are less than 10 grams, because there is a certain risk associated with EPO, and that risk is the risk of developing clots. And specifically in myeloma, this becomes relevant because there are certain other drugs that you tend to be on, such as thalidomide and lenalidomide, and these in itself can predispose to clots. So this discussion of using EPO in the context of your myeloma should be with your healthcare providers, and if they think it's safe for you to be on it, that's certainly something which can be used for anemia. Kidney function, again, has been mentioned previously. It is not uncommon in patients with myeloma, and the key to taking care of this from your perspective would be make sure you're well hydrated. I generally will tell my patients to drink between 2 and 3 liters of fluid a day. And finally, the last thing I will mention is the risk of infections as well. You know, myeloma in itself tends to immunocompromise you. Some of the medications we put you on also tend to immunocompromise you. And therefore, if you have a new onset of a fever while you're being treated for your myeloma, make sure you get in touch with your physicians, and infections should generally be treated appropriately with antibiotics as and when needed. When it comes time for the flu shot, you should absolutely be getting your flu shot, and typically we do recommend things like a pneumonia shot for patients with myeloma. So although all of these novel agents are very effective and are generally well tolerated, you know, they do come with side effects. And the big ones I will mention are, especially with the proteasome inhibitor class of drugs like bortezomib, the side effects you will see are neuropathy. Neuropathy can be fairly debilitating. We've gotten away from that neuropathy quite a bit now, because some of the newer drugs we're using, which fall into that same category like carfilzomib or Kyprolis, does not in fact have the same degree of neuropathy, or very little neuropathy in fact, as does Velcade. The other thing we've learned over the last couple of years is the use of Velcade given under the skin, so Velcade given subcutaneously, and when we give that shot under the skin, the rate of neuropathy has dropped considerably. So I think we've gotten better at how we use these drugs, but if you indeed have neuropathy, either from Velcade or from thalidomide, which we used to tend to use quite a lot in the last 4 or 5 years, then using drugs to take care of symptoms from neuropathy are important, and the typical drugs that we tend to use are things like gabapentin, Cymbalta, and Lyrica, and all of these are very useful in the treatment of neuropathy. With neuropathy treatment, I would encourage you to use vitamin supplements as well. We know that vitamin B supplements tend to be fairly useful in this setting, so B6, B12, and in some cases, certain amino acids like alpha-lipoic acid and L-carnitine also tend to be very useful. Finally, I think keeping up with physical therapy and exercise helps decrease problems not only associated with neuropathy, but also is of great advantage to bone disease. The more active you are, the better you're going to be feeling, and the better you're going to be able to tolerate all of these treatments. So keeping active, very critically important. The other piece is eating a healthy diet, and there's nothing specific about a diet. You don't have to watch specific foods, but if you eat a good healthy diet, it's going to help you deal with your disease a lot better. Again, you know, given the complexity of both the symptoms from the disease itself and from all of the treatments that we give you, again, I will tell you that it's very important that you kind of keep in touch with your healthcare team, talk to them about all your symptoms, let your healthcare providers know, because end of the day, I think it's a team effort which is going to get you through your treatment for myeloma. And again, participating in available clinical trials will help inform all of us and improve outcomes for patients now and hopefully in the future as well. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Rajay, for a very comprehensive presentation on multiple myeloma and on really on coping with some of the discomfort and pain of multiple myeloma, as well as how to reduce some of the complications. So thank you very much. And our next speaker is Dr. Douglas Peterson. And Dr. Peterson is going to address dental care before, during, and after treatment. And Dr. Peterson is a frequent presenter on our programs. He's professor of oral medicine, Department of Oral Health and Diagnostic Sciences, School of Dental Medicine, chair, program on head and neck cancer and oral oncology, NAE Comprehensive Cancer Center, University of Connecticut Health Center. And he's really going to address the care of your dental care, really, before, during, and after treatment. Dr. Peterson?
Thank you, Carolyn. I'm delighted to be part of this very important conversation today. And over the next few minutes, I'd like to address several key issues, including the role of your dentist relative to the management of multiple myeloma. And this includes prevention and treatment of complications of myeloma that may develop in the mouth. And then, as Dr. Rajay mentioned, I'd like to also emphasize the importance, indeed the value, of communicating with your healthcare team throughout the myeloma treatment, as well as during the many years after that treatment has been completed. So just a few words about the overall context before we talk about some specific issues. The overall context in relation to the role of the dentist in your myeloma care. I think it's important to note that not all cancers and not all cancer treatments cause mouth problems, including bone problems of the jaw, either during or after that cancer therapy. And this is certainly the case with multiple myeloma. Not all myeloma patients and treatments of myeloma result in mouth problems. There are some excellent resources, such as afforded by cancer care to patients and their families and to the cancer team, to guide in the decision-making and the treatments of any of the mouth problems should they actually occur. And this idea that Dr. Rajay mentioned at the end of her comments relative to this partnership among the patient and the family and the healthcare team, that partnership is designed to result in very clear understandings before, during, and after treatment and optimal outcomes for many, many years. Now, specifically regarding multiple myeloma in relation to the mouth and associated dental issues, as Dr. Wolf mentioned, multiple myeloma can involve different bone sites in the body, and that's certainly the case with the lower jaw, or what we call the mandible, of patients. Multiple myeloma can occur either early on or in later stages involving the lower jaw of patients. And it can sometimes cause jawbone pain that very much seems like a toothache or a gum infection. And a dental team is well prepared to examine the site and either confirm or rule out the possibility that myeloma is contributing to the mouth pain. So that if you're developing mouth pain, it's important to be part of the healthcare team and seeing the dental team in that group to see if this is related to the myeloma itself or is related to something not related to the myeloma at all. Now, some of the cancer treatments for myeloma, as we've heard from Drs. Wolf and Rajay, can cause some temporary changes in the mouth, including mouth sores. Dr. Wolf mentioned autologous stem cell transplant, and some of the chemotherapy regimens used to prepare the patient for receiving that transplant can cause some temporary injury in the lining tissues of the mouth. And in some cases, these patients can be sufficiently painful to require systemic pain medications, even narcotics. Now, these mouth sores, or mucositis as they're called technically, are actually not jawbone problems, so I'll defer on a detailed discussion at this point. But I will note that there are some very good approaches that we can use clinically to reduce the soreness as well as to help the mouth sores heal. And we can certainly discuss any aspect of this if you'd like during the question and answer session. I'd like to follow up on one of the points that Dr. Rajay was making relative to a complication of some of these bone strengthening agents, the osteonecrosis of the jaw that Dr. Rajay mentioned, so-called OMJ. Now, this is a condition that occurs in a very small percentage of myeloma patients receiving these bone-modifying or bone-strengthening agents, products such as the bisphosphonates that we've heard about today, the denosumab that we've heard about today, a very small percentage, somewhere in the range of 1 to 2, maybe 3% of all patients receiving these products can develop ONJ. So it's important to realize that ONJ does not occur in most patients, and it's also very important to build on what Drs. Wolf and Roger were telling us about the really the strategic value, the strategic beneficial effects that these bone strengthening agents offer. Now, ONJ itself involves the development of exposure of the jawbone in either the upper jaw or the lower jaw, again, in a very small subset of patients receiving these products. It may or may not be painful. So pain is not something that is always present in the early stages of the clinical development of ONJ. I'll come back to some of the treatment approaches of ONJ in just a moment, but I'd like to emphasize that probably the best management approach that we can be thinking about as a healthcare team and working with the patient about to undergo treatment with one of these bone strengthening agents is to have a very comprehensive oral examination to make sure that there aren't dental cavities or gum disease or dentures that are not fitting tightly such that they might rub on the mucosa, the lining tissue of the mouth, and cause bone problems. So many cases of ONJ can be prevented if a dental exam is part of the initial workup of the patient who's about to receive one of these bone modifying agents. And it's really this collaboration and communication among the oncologist, the dentist, and the patient that is so essential. This collaboration can result in a very, very successful approach to ideally preventing ONJ from ever developing in that small group of patients over the years ahead, or at least if ONJ does develop, it can be detected early and more easily treated. So what are some of the conditions in the mouth that we in dental medicine look at in a patient who's referred to us by your oncologist to make sure that the mouth is in optimal condition before the patient starts receiving the bone-modifying agent? Well, people may not think about cavities as an infection, but really it's a very complex infectious process of the teeth. So too is the case with gum disease, so-called periodontal disease. These are infectious processes that can involve the bone. And if a patient is on one of these bone strengthening agents, it may sound a little ironic, but depending on the susceptibility to developing ONJ, deep cavities, deep infections, or severe gum disease can actually result in osteonecrosis of the jaw, this exposed bone. I mentioned a few minutes ago that we also look in patients who are wearing either partial or complete dentures, how well adapted those dentures are to the supporting tissues in the upper and lower jaw. What we want to avoid is any undue rubbing or injury to the lining tissues of the mouth that are supporting those dentures so that we don't have open sores developing because of denture irritation that could lead to exposed bone and even ONJ over time. There's some other risk factors that really go beyond the teeth and the gums and the dentures, and there's a suggestion in the literature that additional risk factors for developing ONJ include older age, long-term use of steroids, diabetes, smoking, use of smoking tobacco. All of these are viewed as additional risk factors for the development of ONJ. But there's a lot more research that's needed to better understand these risks as well as how we manage these patients. And so I would really advocate, as Dr. Wolf and Roger were mentioning, the importance of discussing the opportunities for clinical trials and your participation in clinical trials during your myeloma treatment experience. Now, if ONJ does occur, despite everyone's careful attention up front before the bone strengthening agents are given, if the lesion occurs early, if we detect it early, it can be typically treated very conservatively with antibiotics and good topical wound care. If there's a little bit of bone that's right on the surface and easy to remove, then we'll gently remove that. It may take several months for that healing to occur, but typically this very conservative approach over several weeks or even several months, again, working with the healthcare team can result in a very fine outcome. So as I close, I'd like to really emphasize the importance of this communication. If you're sensing a problem in your mouth, please let the healthcare team know. And we will do everything we can, of course, to work with you, to help you. If you're about to receive a bone strengthening agent, the idea of having a careful and thorough dental evaluation and a conversation of the dental team with you and the rest of the oncology team can go a long way to preventing mouth problems. And then finally, where we started about 8 minutes ago or so, just really capitalizing on the excellent resources through Cancer Care and other programs like Cancer Care, and really building on that partnership among you, the patient, your family, and the healthcare team to produce these really very effective outcomes in many, many patients for many, many years to come. Carolyn, I'll stop at that point. Thank you very, very much.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Peterson, for really this wonderful presentation. And you know, our teeth are so important, and I think Dr. Peterson always tells us all the things that we really could do to really enhance our health and well-being and our care of our teeth. So, and I hope that you'll be able to follow through on many of his recommendations. They're so important. And our next presenter is Maria Chi. And Maria is an oncology social worker by training. She's our clinical oncology social worker supervisor here at Cancer Care. And Ms. Chi is going to address the free psychosocial support services offered by Cancer Care and the role of support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Ms. Chi, who is a valued colleague of mine at Cancer Care.
Thank you, Carolyn. As a social worker here at Cancer Care, I'd like to talk briefly about the emotional and social impact of cancer, like multiple myeloma, and how cancer can help you. Excuse me, Cancer Care can help you. When you're first diagnosed with multiple myeloma, it can be an overwhelming experience. You're faced with a series of choices and may not know where to turn. Talking to a Cancer Care social worker can help you get the support you need. Cancer Care is a staff of licensed master's level oncology social workers, and all of our services are completely free of charge. We're experienced in helping people to manage the emotional, physical, and financial challenges that arise after a cancer diagnosis. One of the most important things to acknowledge about the emotional impact of cancer, like multiple myeloma, is that it can be felt as a loss. It can be a loss that manifests itself in many ways for both patients and caregivers. That's why it's so important to have an outlet to acknowledge how you're feeling and have someone you can talk to who will be supportive and understanding. This can mean talking one-on-one with a Cancer Care social worker or joining one of our support groups. Cancer Care offers face-to-face groups in our local offices in the New York area, as well as telephone and online groups. These groups offer an opportunity to talk with other people impacted by cancer, such as multiple myeloma, along with the help of a Cancer Care social worker to facilitate the group. Participating in a support group can be helpful simply by allowing you to talk with others who are in a similar situation and who truly understand in a way that no one else can. Group members offer encouragement and a real sense of community that can provide you with additional support and guidance. If you're interested in participating in a group, please call our Hope Line at 1-800-813-4673. Finally, multiple myeloma can have a significant impact on your finances, and for many of the people I talk to every day, this can be an overwhelming aspect. Cancer Care provides limited financial assistance to help with transportation to treatment or with home care, child care, or pain medication. We can also connect you with other organizations for additional assistance to help you with the costs of cancer. So please contact us at 1-800-813-4673 or go to our website at www.cancercare.org for more information about our oncology social work support. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Marie, for that excellent presentation. And now we have time for questions. We actually have lots of time for questions. I'm going to ask Sam to explain to everybody how to queue up for questions and also to bring all of our speakers on board so that we can all be here to address any of your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking the Ask a Question button. Our first question comes from Mary W. Your line is now opened.
Thank you. My question regards my experience with compression fractures and vertebroplasty. I had to be admitted to the hospital the evening after or the evening of the vertebroplasty for pain management, pain control, and was put on narcotics for quite some time after that. The neurosurgeon was very surprised, but I just thought we should let people know this can happen. And we never really discussed the medicines used for pain control.
Oh, that's an excellent question. Thank you so much. Dr. Rajay, could you address that question?
Absolutely. So, Mary, you bring up a very, very important point. You know, most times these procedures are kind of outpatient, but sometimes you don't get the kind of level of pain control that you would want with a procedure such as a vertebroplasty. And oftentimes we've had to, sometimes we've had to keep people over. For pain management, I think the best drugs are actually narcotics. They tend to be the safest drugs in myeloma. We don't typically like using non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen, Aleve, and Advil, etc., because these drugs can be bad for your kidneys. They can affect your platelet count. So honestly, the safest drugs are drugs like the narcotics, including drugs like oxycodone, OxyContin, and sometimes if you're able to put you on longer-acting drugs like the MS-Contin or OxyContin, they work really quite well. They don't interfere with your kidney function, which, as you all know, for myeloma is an extremely important thing to maintain throughout the course of your disease.
Excellent. Thank you. And we have a question from Rick, one of our online participants. My doctor suggested D3, not D, with calcium. I use Viactive Chewable. What is the difference between D and D3? And Dr. Rajay, could you address that?
Sure. So D3 is the more bioavailable one. You're with just the total D that you were being supplemented with earlier. Your vitamin D levels may not have gone up completely, so this one gets absorbed better. And that may have been the reason why he gave you vitamin D3, and that's perfectly a reasonable way to do it. It's usually about 1,000 units of the vitamin D that you should be on. Typically, we do check vitamin D levels once every so often in myeloma. It should be done once, say, I would say every 3 or 4 months, not any more than that. And typically, we like the vitamin D levels to be above 30. Getting close to 50 would be nice. Especially if you're living up where I live in, which is the Northeast, we don't get as much sun as some of you others do. So a lot of us need to be supplemented with this extra vitamin D.
Excellent. Our next question, Sam?
Our next question comes from Brenda S. Your line is now opened.
Yes. I am wondering about treating the infection problem with immunoglobulins on a monthly basis. Is this a recommended thing, especially for somebody that is elderly?
Dr. Rache, Dr. Wolf, do you want to address that?
I can take that one. So I mentioned when I was describing myeloma that this malignant cell can multiply to be trillions of cells. We call that a malignant clone. That malignant clone makes a dysfunctional, non-functional antibody to protect you, and it actually suppresses all the good guys so that the good IgG, if you will, or immunoglobulin, is suppressed. And many patients have very low immunoglobulins or normal immunoglobulins. In those patients, we often do replace with immunoglobulin every month. We also replace in cases where patients may have normal immunoglobulins but have repeated infections because what appears to be normal immunoglobulins may not be normal immunoglobulins. So low immunoglobulins or repeated infections, and we certainly do find it very helpful to replace with IVIG or intravenous immunoglobulin. Also, in the setting of a severe infection, it would be reasonable to give additional immunoglobulin as well as antibiotics.
Thank you. And we have a question from Thomas, one of our online participants. If you are on Zometa, how do you limit the chances of developing ONJ if you need below the gum dental treatment on a routine or emergency basis? Dr. Peterson, could you address that?
Yeah, excellent question, Thomas. Thank you. I'll just start briefly by emphasizing that just because somebody's on Zometa does not automatically translate into high risk for ONJ. In fact, it's just the opposite. I'll just mention that in general, with bisphosphonates, the orally administered agents, tend to be less riskful for causing ONJ than intravenously administered bisphosphonates. We don't have good risk predictors on which dental disease and which dental treatment of that dental disease are more likely or less likely to increase the risk for ONJ. And so what I would suggest is that if you need below-the-gum treatment, that you discuss with your dentist, who in turn can discuss with the oncology team the benefits and risks of that dental procedure. I do want to emphasize how important these bone-strengthening agents are, and I also would like to reemphasize again how small the risk for actual development of ONJ is. If the dental treatment then contributes to ONJ, the actual dental treatment, the dental team, if it's detected early, the lesion is detected early by the dental team, it's typically quite treatable, although it may take several weeks or even a few months. So the key is the communication with the dental team, the communication among the healthcare team, and really maintaining ideal oral health. That goes a long, long way to eliminating the risk for development of ONJ.
Excellent, thank you. And we have another question from one of our participants from the Netherlands, from Tamara. Greetings from the Netherlands. Thank you for this excellent presentation. Can you tell me the difference between Lucentis, the term you hear used in Holland, and lesions? I have lesions, one large one in the arm, but what are Lucentis? I have these as well in the skull and some vertebrae. Dr. Rache, can you address this question?
Sure. So, Lucentis are what Dr. Wolf had described earlier. These are the lytic lesions, and they're essentially lesions and lucentis are pretty much the same. When he's referring to, or when your doctor is referring to a lesion in, I heard it was the arm, it's probably a bigger lucent lytic lesion. It's essentially the same thing. It's myeloma occupying the bone and eating away the bone and causing this hole in the bone, so to speak.
Okay, thank you. And our next question is from Joanne, one of our online participants. Can I get dental work as crown on my teeth while on Zometa? Dr. Peterson?
Well, the short answer would be that's a good discussion with your dentist. If you need a crown, many crown procedures do not involve much of the gum tissue or even the bone. So depending on the design of the crown that's being planned, there may be very, very little invasiveness of either the gum or the bone. But before the dentist begins on that, there should be a very good discussion with the oncologist and the dentist to make sure that the coordination and communication is in place. So many general dental procedures, including the placement of crowns, can be quite safely done in somebody who's on a bone strengthening agent. But again, it's coordinating the planning among the dentist and the oncology team.
Thank you. And that's very important, that collaborative effort. You see it on the call today. We have a multidisciplinary team we have medical oncologists, we have a oral surgeon on the call, dentist, and we have an oncology social worker. But that kind of collaborative effort in talking about these issues is really important amongst, particularly with your healthcare, with your physicians and oral dentists. That's very important. We have another question from one of our online participants, Cheryl. 2 years after a stem cell transplant, I still receive Zometa infusions every 3 months. I discovered I had a healing rib fracture a year ago, so I decided to continue at this rate. Are there tests available that can tell you if you need to continue Zometa or if it's okay to stop because enough is built up in your bones? Dr. Rajay, would you like to take this one?
Yeah, sure. Cheryl, that's an excellent question, and I don't think we know the answer to that. The notion is that once you're on a drug like zoledronic acid and Zometa, they stay in the bones forever. The other issue, though, is the risk of you developing bone disease does not go away as you go through your myeloma, through the diagnosis of myeloma throughout your life. Your risk of developing skeletal complications medications like the rib fractures you've just mentioned stays constant. What drugs like zoledronic acid and pumidronate, Aridia, and Zometa do is decrease this risk by about 50%. Part of the reason for us to step back a little bit and do it once every 3 months or so is so that we are not exposing you to excessive doses of these drugs, so that long-term complications like what Dr. Peterson has talked about, osteonecrosis of the jaw, are minimized. But I would say that you would need to continue on those bisphosphonates. And there's no real good testing. We have looked at certain bone biomarkers, but they do not tend to be predictive once you've been on these drugs for a long time. So certainly you need to continue on the bisphosphonates. You can discuss with your treating oncologist as to whether you can decrease the frequency of these drugs a little bit as you move forward.
Excellent. And we have another question from one of our online participants. I've read that chewing ice while receiving melphalan helps relieve the dangers of oral sores and other unpleasantness. Is this a good thing to try? Is there anything else you might recommend, Michael? Dr. Roche or Dr. Wolf, would you like to address this?
I can maybe take it. I don't know what they do in Boston. We typically recommend to our patients that they chew ice while we give the melphalan, the big dose chemotherapy we use for the transplant. Melphalan really circulates in the blood for a very short period of time, so you can chew on the ice and perhaps prevent it from doing damage in the mouth. We don't see a lot of mucositis or mouth sores, and we're not sure it's because the patients chew ice, but it's a small thing we can do. There's actually one of my colleagues is doing a study comparing patients who chew on ice and those who don't, but we're still waiting for those results. It's not a bad thing to do.
Excellent. Thank you. That's very helpful. There also is a question about someone who's preparing for a for online participants here. I'm scheduled to have a stem cell transplant in a few months. How should I prepare and what should I expect? Dr. Wolf, can you address this in a general way, of course?
Sure. So how to prepare is just to stay in pretty good shape, actually. We don't like to take patients to transplant if they have infections. We like them to be in reasonable physical condition, so walking every day and eating healthy is obvious. What you can expect at the best end is that it won't be very bad at all. I don't know your exact situation, but typically our patients do not have a lot of nausea or vomiting or diarrhea. They only have a short period of time with low blood counts, only a small risk of infection. They will lose their hair, but it will come back within a few months. And they go home maybe a little fatigued, but by a month or two, they're back to normal. At the really bad end, the 5% of our patients may have mouth sores, loss of appetite, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. It could be a difficult 2 or 3 weeks. But the great majority of patients do not have a difficult time with it.
Excellent. And there also is a question just about their kidney function being affected, and I wonder if Dr. Wolf, if you can say a little bit more about that as well.
Certainly. Kidney function is quite an issue with myeloma, either because of the disease that makes proteins that can give kidney problems, or because of some of the drugs we use, or because of infections. So the number of reasons why the kidneys may be affected. We're all doctors who manage myeloma are very conscious of that and watch kidney function every time they see you. The important thing is to keep up fluids, as Dr. Rajay mentioned, because that can influence it quite a bit, that is, stay well hydrated. And make sure your doctors are adjusting your medicines based on what your kidney function is.
And this will be our last question. The question is from Annie. My dietitian recommended a 90-gram protein diet. Can you comment on this recommendation? Dr. Rajay, can you just address this in a general way?
Can you just repeat that one more time?
Yes, my dietitian recommended a 90-gram protein diet. Can you comment on this recommendation? And again, if you could just comment on it in a general way.
So, you know, there's no, just because this is a protein-related disease, it's got nothing to do with the protein in your diet. So the normal amount of protein that's required by you would be fine. Just because we keep telling you that you have a protein circulating in your blood does not mean you cut back on the proteins. Sometimes a lot of patients will have low albumin levels, which is a good protein, and the dietitian in that setting may have recommended a higher dose of protein intake. But otherwise, there's nothing in terms of specifics around how much protein you should be eating. You should certainly not have to restrict the amount of protein that you need to be on.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers. You've really been extraordinary. This has been an amazing call. We've covered a lot of territory. And I also want to thank all of you who asked questions on the phone or online particularly. It was quite a tour de force. We took lots of questions today, and I hope we got to many of your questions. So I want to thank you. And I also want to thank all of you who've been listening. And I want to remind you that this is a one-hour education workshop, and that when we plan a program like this, we realize that you all have many needs that we probably cannot address in the 1 hour. We hope you've received some information that you can take back to your treating healthcare team, and also that if you have other questions or concerns or needs, that you will feel free contacting Cancer Care, calling us at 1-800-813-4673, and speaking with one of our oncology social workers here at Cancer Care. Most importantly, I don't want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with multiple myeloma or with cancer or with your concerns. I want you to now know that you're part of this community of support, and you can call us, and we're here to help you. And again, I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may all disconnect. Everyone, have a wonderful day.